Welcome, welcome, curious souls, to the Macabre Emporium, your sanctuary for the unusual, the mysterious, and the appalling.
Step through our cryptic doorway into a world where secrets whisper and enigmas come to life.
I'm David.
And I'm Sarah.
Together, we're your custodians of the macabre, guiding you through tales that defy the ordinary.
Discover the untold stories, from lesser-known cases of true crime to the bizarre events that captivate us.
Join us on a journey to the shadows where the mainstream fades and the extraordinary beckons.
So whether you seek the bizarre, the eerie, or the chillingly obscure,
you're in for a treat here at Macabre Emporium.
Welcome back to Macabre Emporium. This is episode 102.
And if you come over from the History of Goon podcast for the first time ever, welcome.
Welcome. Hello.
Our first episode after being a guest host, co-host, whatever we want to call it, with Kevin Carlton over there at History of Goon podcast. So, and if you guys listen to us regularly on our feed, so the week prior that this episode was supposed to be out, there was a fuck ton of railroad construction going outside the Emporium. I came in, I turned the board on, and I listened to it to see how it was tripping noise gates. There was absolutely no way we were going to be able to record our regular episode with all of that going on. But it's all done and over with, thankfully, because it was fucking hell for me to get home.
For weeks, almost.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that was an adventure for me at that point, because what usually would take me 20 minutes one way to get home, it took closer to 30 because of traffic being backed up, as multiple railroad crossings being closed at one time. So all that's done and over with, thankfully. So now we're back with a regular episode, and it's going to be me this week. And also, the first week in November, we're supposed to have an episode out on the 5th. We are going to delay that to November 10th because we're going to be doing a very large subject matter that's going to actually take both of us to do this.
Yep. So it'll just be a few days late. It'll come out Monday the 10th instead of Wednesday the 5th.
And if you already know what it is by that date, don't tell anybody.
Don't tell nobody.
Because I'm sure some of you might know exactly what we're going to talk about that day.
Maybe.
I'm sure at least one person that listens to us will know by date.
Well, like Kevin?
I wasn't going to name names, but could be.
If anybody does, it's him.
Yep. So this week, we're going to go back to the Victorian period for a disastrous sorts.
We're going back to the way back.
Yeah, we're going way back to the way back when we may or may not see Willie or Blanche. I remember you talking to me about, are they going to be in the episode? And I took that as a challenge to figure out a way to put them in here. And I don't remember if I did it or not. We'll find out together in surprise.
Okay.
To see if I remembered if I actually did or not. I'm pretty sure I did somehow, but I don't remember. So this week we're going to be talking about the Victoria Hall disaster.
Victoria Hall?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So are you ready to get started?
Yes.
All right, let's get going. So Victoria Hall was built in Sunderland, England by Edward Backhouse. He was a partner in his family's banking firm of Backhouse & Company and was one of the founders of the Sunderland Echo, the city's daily newspaper. He also dealt in philanthropy. I can never say that damn word.
Philanthropy.
You know, the thing that the rich people do with all their money. That thing.
Philanthropy.
I will never be able to say that word no matter how much I try. I don't know how many times I brought it up in episodes before, and I still can't fucking say it. So, you know, he would do the fancy rich thing with his money to the poor people in the east end of Sunderland.
They call that fancy thing philanthropy.
Yes, what she just said. We're moving on from it. In 1870, he saw the need for a new public hall. So public halls basically were like gathering spots in this time.
Okay.
Kind of like the one down the road from us. The building's facade was that of the Gothic-style architecture with full-height windows. So, like, think old-timey church kind of deal, or church dungeons in Diablo 4, basically.
Okay. Beautiful.
Mm-hmm. The construction would be completed in 1872 at the cost of £9,500, or $12,780 US. But that would come out today in 2025, over £900,000 a day. And did not include the U.S. conversion due to most inflation calculators for the United States dollar going only back to 1913.
And what year was this?
1872.
Oh, damn. Okay.
Because any U.S. dollar data was not tracked before 1913.
So it could be well over that 12,000. Yes. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's what it would have been in that time, was $12,000.
Okay.
And I tried to inflate all that to today, and I couldn't find that amount, a U.S. dollar amount from back then, because they only go to 1913 in U.S. calculations. Victoria Hall could seat up to 3,000 people in two balconies on the floor level. One of the things I did learn while researching is that the floor level is known as the pit level, where most likely the wealthy would be as this is also closest to the stage. Or our Victorian friends William Blanche, who come up in these type of episodes, would be seated from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
And there it is. I remembered I put it in here, but I remember kind of it was towards the beginning.
And you put him in the pit. Good job.
Mm-hmm. Great. Now that you said that, all I can see is fucking Willie out there doing windmills and shit. Doing windmills in his Sunday best for the theater at the hall.
Yeah.
The first balcony, or the lower balcony, is known as the dress circle, where the middle class would be seated with padded seating. The second, or upper balcony, is also known as the gallery god, where the cheapest seats with little comfort, which would most likely just be plain wooden benches, you know, just taking 2x4, slapping them together. Hey, here's a bench for you to sit on. Victoria Hall would be constructed at the corner of Tower. I'm sure if I say this wrong, Ben's probably will let me know. Tower Road and Laura Street next to Mowbray Park. And I couldn't find any records of other type of events that were held here at Victoria Hall in the 10 years before 1883, other than entertainers, political lecturers, musical acts, and so on. That's all. They never specified names or anything. So that was like it.
Just very general.
Mm-hmm. On June 16th, 1883, a traveling act known as the Fays would perform at Victoria Hall. Billed as brother and sister, Alexander Fay was a professor of conjuring, and his sister Annie was a spiritual magician, or an American enchantress. Their act included illusions, magic tricks, puppetry, live marionettes, and ghost illusions. It would also state on the bill that children in attendance would receive a handsome present of rocks, toys, and sea. And sea is actually the precursor to etc.
Oh.
So it's like the and sign and the letter C.
Okay.
Like, now I know this might be sound a little bit odd by giving away a rock like Charlie Brown on Halloween, but this is just rock candy is what it is.
Okay.
Because even when I looked at it, it's like, they can't be literal fucking rocks. So it's like, what was rocks in this time period? And it's rock candy. With tickets only being sold for 1 to 3 pennies, depending on seating, 2,000 people, mostly children, were in attendance. A majority of the show had passed without incident, except a few children getting sick in the front row from a puff of smoke from one of the tricks from the Fays. When the show came to an end, they announced that children with tickets of a certain number and had won a prize while they exited. While the children in the floor stalls were already giving gifts, the children from the upper gallery, which was estimated to be around 1,100, would rush down a staircase to a locked door with a gap just wide enough for one child to pass through. They believed that the door was bolted open to about 20 inches wide, which would allow only one child at a time to pass through while they checked the numbers on their tickets.
Mm-hmm.
With so few adults in attendance in that section, the children at the front of the line would become trapped and crushed under the weight of those behind them. We have also seen this in previous episode of the Hartford, Connecticut Circus Fire, where people fled for their lives while the Ringling Brothers tank caught fire in episode 13.
Yep.
When there was only the one without, I wish I would remember to look that up, from only one entrance being available due to the circus tent being set for show period because of the tunnel that they would use for the animals to come in and out of.
Yeah.
Created just the one entrance and exit out of the tent when it caught fire. You might be thinking also at this point, why didn't someone just open the door?
Why didn't someone just open the door?
Let me guess, you're probably thinking, well, why didn't someone just open the door with all these children being crushed, right?
Well, I mean, yeah.
The problem with that was the door swung inward to the staircase to the balconies, and there was also the weight of 1,100 children pressing on this door. The second issue was the lock for the door was on the same side as the children.
Of course.
Caretaker of the hall, Frederick Graham, tried to detangle the piled up children and then ran up an alternate staircase and diverted about 600 children to the staircase away from the crowd crush and to safety. Meanwhile, other adults who were there pulled children through the opening until an unknown man or men pulled the door from its frame. It would only take 30 minutes to clear all the children from the hallway. William Codling Jr., who attended the show with his sister Sarah, said a year later about the crush at Victoria Hall. Soon we were most uncomfortably packed, but still going down. Suddenly felt that I was treading upon someone lying on the stairs, and I cried in horror to those behind, "Keep back! Keep back! There's someone down!" It was no use. I passed slowly over and onwards with the mass, and before long, I passed over others without emotion. At last we came to a dead stop, but those still behind came crowding on. And though we cried to get back some looked straight in front, bewildered, while others said they couldn't. William attended the show with his sister, who also survived by being down in the pit and knew nothing of what happened. And there's like a whole, like, 2-3 paragraphs of his whole account, but I wanted to give, since this was the section where he was caught in this crowd crush, that's what he accounted for. His father actually would, when the news spread throughout the town, he went running looking for him and met him halfway and found out that his sister was already home at that point.
Oh, Jesus. So at that point, he might have thought that his sister was, like, still in.
Mm-hmm.
Oof.
In total, 183 children aged between 3 and 14 would lose their lives in the crowd crush at Victoria Hall, all from asphyxia. Some families would end up losing all of their children. It would take up to 4 days to bury the 183 children, so businesses did remain closed and curtains drawn on homes by the request of the mayor out of the respect of the dead, except for one house that for some reason had no blinds, no shutters, and there wasn't any other explanation as to why this one house was this particular way. And I'm bringing this, put it in here because it came up in everything that I looked into. Hmm. But nothing ever explained why this one house had no shutters, no curtains, no nothing.
Were they Amish?
This was in England, so probably not. What?
Were they Amish English?
I don't know. I see what she's saying. Okay, God damn it. You think I would have caught the English joke from the beginning? When the news reached Queen Victoria, she quoted Matthew 14:19 in a message of condolence with a donation to the disaster fund for the funerals. "Suffer little children to come unto me, for our such is the kingdom of God." The fund would reach £5,000, coming to £401,900 today, or $500,000 in our currency.
Damn.
Any money left over of the fund was used to commission a memorial for the victims located in Mowbray Park. This memorial would be a marble statue of a mother holding her dead child. It would be moved to Bishop Wearmouth Cemetery in Sunderland and would be moved back to the park after it had been fully restored in 2002 with a protective canopy.
What was it made out of?
Marble.
Oh, okay.
After the investigation of the disaster, nobody would be formally charged for the deaths, but this would lead to laws for public entertainment buildings to have a set minimum of outward swinging doors. It would also lead to the push bar for emergency doors in 1892. Push bars would start be used more in the United States in 1903 after the Iroquois Theater Fire, which killed 602 people. It might be an episode one day.
I have a thing about that saved in my links.
Right.
That I've been meaning to say. It's been there for like a year.
Right. There's like all sorts of stuff. Like, you know, October is Fire Prevention Month, and you would think by now, us going into what, year 3, year 4 now doing this? Mm-hmm. I would have done some of these things, but no, it's October. It's spooky month. We're going to do that kind of thing. But this was supposed to be the last episode of September before we did that. And then the railroad decided to have other plans for us.
Right. We can't. Yeah, we don't control the railroad.
Right. Victoria Hall would be used up until 1941 after it was destroyed by a bomb during World War II. The use of the hall wasn't as popular among most performers knowing what happened there in 1883. Some would even refuse to perform there because of its history.
Hmm.
So after reading more of William Codling Jr.'s eyewitness account of what happened, you know, saying it flows like water and crowd crushes become like its own living organism, basically, because like Halloween a couple of years ago and what was it, South Korea, where people were crushed to death in an alleyway due to this similar thing, I decided that we're going to bring up, you know, macabre emporium safety facts.
Oh.
So here's about what to do if you get caught in a crowd crush. When you've actually started to notice the crowd is getting too crowded for you, well, it's already too late at that. It's not too late at that point. It's already crowded. If you start saying it's really crowded in here, it already is. Because a human body usually takes up about 2.5 square feet. So if you're starting to feel crowded, you already are. It's quote unquote too late at that point. Experts that have studied this kind of phenomenon of crowd crushes and whatnot, They suggest that you fold your arms toward your body like a boxer to keep yourself steady and safe from being pulled or caught under in the crowd crush. So there was a video explanation, like he used 15 participants to do this. And what he had them all standing like you would in a crowd, and he would shove one from the back and everybody lunged forward. And then he explained how you needed everybody to stand with your arms up like a boxer would and your feet apart like as boxers would.
Yeah.
And then he did the same thing. Hardly anybody moved. Also, they suggest try to keep breathing space around your face. That's because a lack of oxygen could cause you to feel faint or dizzy. So basically try and if you go down, you want to protect your vital organs. You know, I think I'm going to handle myself. No, I'm not. So if you're caught in a crowd crush and you're moving with it, try and keep yourself, you know, give yourself space to breathe out of. Is one of your biggest things because you can't breathe. That's going to, you know, lower your odds of survival even further. Keep moving in the direction with the crowd. Crowd crushes move like water, and don't try and fight it or try and shove ahead. Just move with it. Try to walk at the same speed as the rest of the crowd. If you happen to lose your balance or fall to the ground, get back on your feet as soon as possible or ask for help. If you're not able to stand back up, curl your body into a ball and protect your head, neck, and other vital organ areas the best you can. Steer clear of walls, railings, fences, or other solid or barricading objects. This is where the crowd pressure tends to surge. So think of like when you put your finger over your garden hose to get that spray. The same effect happens. Like I mentioned, crowd crushes move like water. So if the crowd crush is going for an open doorway, try and get yourself away from where the door frame is going to meet, because that's where the crush is going to be the worst.
Yeah.
Stay calm and try not to rush or pull away from the moving crowd. And if you're able to edge yourself to that's not where my thought process went, but okay.
Just the look on your face, like, oh man.
If you're able to edge yourself to the side of the crowd or a place where the crowd is less dense, well, also moving with the crowd to try and get out of it if you're able to. With all those tips, you may be able to survive a crowd crush. But if you're some weirdo that wants to edge yourself in the middle of it, then you're okay, you got some other problems going on and you're going.
Do you want to know the best tip for avoiding a crush?
Stay the fuck home.
Stay the fuck home.
I took a guess that's what her answer was going to be, but yeah, there it is.
Like, even concerts, like, I used to love being in the front, but right. The older I got,
yep.
I can't.
Right.
I can't do it.
Right, and also because of things like this is probably like why seating capacities and standing capacities are a thing, because one of the things that did come up was, like, I want to say it was either Jethro Tull or The Who when they played in Michigan. Came up with this.
Oh.
It was the same thing. I'm pretty confident it was The Who that came up. There was a crowd crush at a Michigan concert in Lansing, I think it was.
Dang.
Because I was going to bring other variables. Examples. That's the damn word I'm looking for. Of crowd crushes that's happened here in the United States with it also. But
yeah.
There wasn't much information other than, yeah, it was this concert at this date and blah, 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 blah. And that was it. So it was like not much I could really go off of with it. And now it's a little short episode we've had this week. I mean, it kind of, last week's was a little longer than normal, even though it was an art episode. It was, you know, we wanted to try and keep it a little bit shorter.
Yeah.
I know you guys got all other shows you guys like listening to.
Mm-hmm. Although.
You should be the first one you listen to anyway.
And we can't guarantee you that the episode that comes out on November 10th isn't going to be long as fuck.
Right.
Not like stupid long, but.
Right. We're not talking like 3 or 4 hours. There's just a whole lot of information for one person to cipher through, and
yeah,
I know how Sarah can be about that, and she gets overwhelmed and might want to just, I'm not doing this, I'm gonna get something else.
Yeah.
Nope. I saw, spoiler alert, this is the one time she's actually told me ahead of time what she's doing. Actually, I think I brought it up to her when I noticed, because she's mentioned it to me before, and I happened to look on the calendar to see when it was, and I was like, hey, it's on this week of an actual episode release, but let's do it 2 days early.
Well, I wanted to do it the same story. I wanted to do the same story on a different date because of music.
Right.
But having it come out on the anniversary. Right. Yeah. Right. So it'll get done.
Yep. Once I started skimming through a Wikipedia page for one of them for this said subject we're not talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I was like,
it's a lot.
I already knew it was going to be just a lot for her, so we're going to split it.
Yep.
So with all that said, you ready to get out of the Emporium for the day, Sarah?
I am. I'm tired.
I'm sure. It's a long drive here from home.
It's so long.
So until next time, guys.
Remember to creep it real.
And stay spooky.
Join our Facebook group by searching Macabre Emporium. Like and subscribe on YouTube at Macabre Emporium Podcast. Follow us on TikTok at Macabre Emporium Pod. Follow us on Twitter at Macabre Emporium. If you have any stories of the paranormal, your local true crime, or weird history that you would like us to look into and possibly do an episode on, email us at macabreemporiumpod@gmail.com. And remember to follow, rate, review, and share whenever and wherever you can to help us grow our podcast.